there. Thanks for listening to Let's Talk Withdrawal, a weekly discussion on antidepressants and the issues surrounding them.
Hello, this is James. Welcome to episode 16 of Let's Talk Withdrawal, a weekly podcast discussing antidepressants and mental health. A little later, I'll be going through some of your feedback. Thanks so much for getting in touch, and please keep your messages coming. I'd love to hear from you. But first, we have an interview with Megan. Megan lives in the USA, and she tells us about how she came into contact with psychiatric medications and how she approached her withdrawal. Megan, thank you so much for talking to us today. Can I start by asking you to tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure. Thanks, James, for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm from Illinois in the US, and I have a great family. I had a really easy upbringing in life. I just, lots of love. There was no big event, I guess, that drew me to an antidepressant at first. I had always been kind of an anxious kid, but just like more excitable than anything. It didn't affect really any of my life. It just made me, I just noticed I was more aware of other people and my surroundings than a lot of other children. And I thought, oh, this is kind of a gift, you know, it could be really helpful to be more aware. But I also was sometimes too aware, I realized. But sleep issues for me were the main reason. So those kind of started more in college as stress levels rose just because of a new life experience, having all these exams and being on my own a little bit. But not much. Occasionally, I took a sleeping pill maybe once every 3 to 4 months, but most of the time I kind of put it on myself, so I wasn't worried about it. At the end of 2007, 21 at the time, my father got diagnosed with terminal brain cancer. And that, I think, was kind of the tipping point for me as far as my anxious heart being very aware of others. My dad was one of the best men I've ever known. We were a really close family, and that was a really hard blow for us. So I think that being my tipping point was kind of drew me to a place of more anxiety, to where I was not sleeping very well at all. And maybe more unconsciously worrying about him. I wasn't very sure. But man, it kept getting worse and worse over time. And of course, he kept getting worse and worse over time. So we kind of shared that in common, unfortunately. But it was a sweet time for both of us. We kind of just prayed a lot together and clung to one another during, you know, a period that not many people get to go through together, just of really poor health. So in 2009, he kind of just really plummeted and couldn't see. It was rough. And I was in my senior year in college. So again, that's a little bit stressful as well. And everything just kind of blew up for me. Yeah. So ultimately, I was an insomniac. I wasn't sleeping at all for like a month. And so I went to the doctor and they put me on sleeping pills, but it wasn't really working. So they prescribed a medicine to me, and I did not even know that it was an antidepressant. I had no idea. I was young. I'd never been on medication besides antibiotics before. So she put me on paroxetine. And I will say that it made things worse for about 2 months, just worse. And so that's kind of where I got started on it. And then my father passed away in October of 2009. So I continued to take it because I was afraid that if I didn't, I would kind of have an even worse reaction with all the grief and everything. So that's kind of where I started.
Thank you, Megan. I'm so sorry to hear about your dad. That must have been really tough for you and your family to go through. And Megan, when you started your antidepressant, did you experience much by way of side effects?
It was hard to tell what was side effects because I still wasn't sleeping. But I could tell that when I would go from taking it to, oh, oops, I forgot to get my prescription refilled. I think there was 4 days. And I felt my heart racing those 4 days. And I just thought, oh, it's because I haven't slept in a while. But really, I think that was the beginning of me realizing what withdrawal would look like, just because I hadn't put it in my system for a couple days.
And having got established on your antidepressant, how long were you taking it before you were having thoughts of stopping it?
I would say 2 years into it, I was kind of at the lowest pharmaceutical dose that they give you. And my sleep started to get worse. My anxiety started to get worse. So I asked my new doctor, because I had then moved, hey, do you think it would be beneficial for me to stop taking this just to see if it would help me sleep better? And she said, sure, why not? So then I think it was a 2 week period, she said, to wean off of it, do a half tablet every other day and then kind of just go off of it from there. So I did that, and for a week it was fine, and then it was terrible. Right, okay. for months and months.
Okay, so can you describe what that period was like for you? What kind of things were you experiencing?
Yes, I can. A lot of it I don't remember, because it was just a blur of terribleness. But I will say that I did have 24/7 panic attacks. They just kept coming and coming and coming. And I didn't know at first. I mean, I was just so new to this. I had no idea why that was happening. I thought, oh, maybe this is just a life stage or something. But it was so terrible. I mean, I was constantly afraid, couldn't sleep. I was sleeping 2 hours a week for an entire month. And so my body and my brain were just exhausted and fried. So it didn't even occur to me that this was because of the medicine. I just was trying to live, you know, moment by moment. And the big symptom for me that I thought was me and not the withdrawal was suicidal thoughts. Lots and lots of suicidal thoughts. I had never, ever entertained that possibility in my life before. And that is what scared me the most. I thought, wow, I'm a different person. I mean, I just was scared. I didn't know myself anymore at that point. Getting to tell my my husband and my mom and my sisters about that, I mean, they were just like, well, don't you want to live for us? And I'm like, I don't know. I've never had these thoughts before, but I can't live like this. I mean, I was just deteriorating. Yeah. So I was seeking counseling. I mean, I had a really good support system, but nobody understood this, right? Nobody had been here. So they just thought, oh, she doesn't want to live. Her life's just not good enough to live. But that wasn't it at all. It was not even me. So that was the biggest scary symptom for me. My mom had to come live with us for 2 weeks because I could not work. I could barely move around. And yeah, a lot of new medication was forced down my throat to try to just get through this period. Yeah. And eventually I went to another doctor who was like, oh, well, you were just on too low of a dose. We need to up your dose of the antidepressant. And of course, I didn't know what the medication had been doing to me. So I thought, if this will eliminate what I'm experiencing, let's do it. Absolutely. Yeah. Give me that prescription. So I did. But unfortunately, as many people have been on antidepressants now, so it takes about 4 to 6 weeks for those effects to really, I don't know, register in our brains. Yeah. So even after I got the medication, it was still really rough for about another month. So I was off work for 3 months, but eventually it got better.
Thank you. And so you did manage to come off for a period, but then were put back on the same drug at a higher dose. Is that right?
Yes. So I was on paroxetine 10 milligrams for 2 years approximately. And then that's what I went off of the first time, and then they put me on paroxetine 20 milligrams. So it was double the dose, and it did work. I mean, it made me feel a euphoria after those 4 weeks, like, oh, wow. And, you know, kind of numb, but like in a weird space, but it was better than the hellish withdrawal symptoms. So I was praising the Lord, you know.
And how did you feel about being put back on the medication? Did you feel stuck, or were you happy to continue it?
I was really happy to continue it. I had no idea the effects of taking the medication, the side effects of taking it at that point. But after a couple years on the 20 milligrams, I did some research. My husband and I were just thinking about maybe starting a family. Yeah. And that's what the kicker was. The medicine that I was taking was like, do not take this during pregnancy. Do not. And so I thought, oh man, I need to really look into this medicine. And I hadn't before. So that's when I started to research.
Okay.
Yeah. And it can be a very black hole just going in the internet, looking at all this crazy stuff about these meds.
It's frightening, isn't it? Because you read things that make you think, that can't possibly be true. How can doctors that are meant to keep you safe and not let you come to harm prescribe something that appears to be this dangerous? But the more you look, the more people you find who are experiencing exactly the same things.
Yes, that's the thing. There was this whole community of people that were saying exactly what you said. How did I get here? How did the doctors let me get here? Because a lot of America and the world, I learned, is just so quick to say, this is my doctor. They have my best interest. They know so much more than I do. I'm going to accept what they say as infallible truth. You know, this will only help me.
I agree, and I've experienced the same. I went to my doctors for help, not to be given a whole load of extra health challenges to deal with. So, Megan, what happened next?
So after I had done a lot more research, I started to become kind of angry. Yeah. And I thought, okay, well, I'm going to get off of this. So I looked back at my first time and I realized that to be withdrawal, which was a big step. Then looking at, okay, making another plan to come off of it slower. That was my main takeaway from what I was getting online from other people. Take it very slow. Yeah. And I realized, 2 weeks is not slow. What I did before was definitely not slow. My brain completely was withdrawing from a substance that had been given for 2 years. So that made sense. So this time I decided instead of just going off of it, I would switch to another medicine. And the other one I wanted to switch to is called buspirone. That's the generic name for it. It's mainly anxiety. It's not full on SSRI antidepressant. So I thought, okay, well, I only need the anxiety part because I was never depressed.
Yeah.
I've never been depressed. Only because of this medicine am I depressed. So I thought, okay, I'll switch to an anxiety medicine. Well, I planned out this time period of, I think, 4 months of which I would, and I thought, okay, that's much longer than 2 weeks. This should be really good. And so I kind of went from 20 to 15 and stayed on 15 for like a month or two, and then went down by increments of 5 until I hit 10. And then I went to 8, and then I was going to go to 5. And then I was just going to hop off at 5 milligrams. Well, I made it to 8 milligrams for 2 weeks. I remember it was Thanksgiving Day, and I went from, I mean, I actually had a really great time during my tapering process that moment. I felt great. I was exercising and eating well just to aid in the coming off of this. And so Thanksgiving night, we were staying at a friend, and I went from 0 to 60 in a matter of seconds. It was like that twinge of anxiety that I hadn't felt since I had withdrawn the first time popped up into my head. And then, of course, it's partially psychological because I just snowballed a little bit. Oh no, this is happening again. And sure enough, it did. It wasn't as intense the first time. And I believe that was because I was still on 8 milligrams. I was still taking it. But even still taking it, I couldn't sleep. I was having panic attacks again, and I was having a suicide idealization. But knowing that that had happened the first time helped me a teeny bit to realize it's not me. This is happening because I am withdrawing. So that's what happened the second time I came off. So I ended up sticking out. I kept taking the 8 milligrams, thinking maybe I'll level out, maybe I'll stabilize. Well, I ended up going to a psychiatrist because I was really getting desperate. I couldn't work again, and I felt terrible to be taking off work because of this. So I just wanted to try to stabilize. Well, the doctor then prescribed me. I'd never seen this doctor before. He prescribed me 3 other medicines to be taking on top of what I was already taking, the paroxetine and the buspirone, because I was switching to it. And then he prescribes 3 more medicines. And I'm telling you, I felt like I was in the twilight zone on these meds. I wasn't sleeping, but I was still so high on all these drugs and miserable. miserable, even more miserable than when I was only on those two. And so I was really, really angry at the world and at this doctor and just at my situation. But I ended up kind of cold turkeying all those three medicines because I thought, I cannot take these for longer than I need. I have to get off of them because otherwise I'll be hooked. I researched those as well, and people had withdrawal symptoms from those, which was terrifying. So I stopped those and I just continued on those other two. But one day I said, I can't do this. So I went from 8 milligrams back up to 20 because I didn't know what to do. I couldn't live like that.
That must have been very tough for you to have to admit defeat after trying so hard and then going back up to the 20 milligrams. What did that feel like?
It was. I felt like I tried to do everything right. I really planned it out this time. I made sure that all my bases were covered, or so I thought. So to get to that defeat position of going all the way back up, which in hindsight I should not have done. I should have gone to 10 or something and stayed there, but I didn't know. So I, you know, in desperation, we do a lot of things that maybe we wouldn't do if we weren't in that position. But it was rough. It was super hard to be in that place and kind of see. I just felt weak and overwhelmingly like I could never do this. Like I was going to be on this forever and therefore never be able to start a family and never be able to do some of the other things that I wanted to do because of this pill that is owning my life. And James, you totally get this.
I do. I really do.
I just felt owned, like I felt shackled to it. And that's a really terrible realization.
It's really rough, isn't it, to be trapped in a place you don't want to be and think, can I come through this intact on the other side?
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
So what happened next, Megan?
So what happened next was after I stabilized on the 20 milligrams that I had gone back up to, and once I was sleeping a little bit better and more rational, I decided to really make a plan. And I did a lot more research. One of the huge resources to me, even now and back then, is a website called Surviving Antidepressants.
It's an excellent website, isn't it?
It's fantastic because it's people that have gone through these experiences, not just with my medicine, but with a frillion other medicines out there that are really difficult. So to get the user's experience is way more beneficial. Anyway, I just consider these people veterans. A lot of them been on 20 years and such. So I researched this website. There was a gal on there who was also coming off paroxetine, and she made a 4-year plan. And to me, that was like, oh, 4 years? You're tapering 4 years? That's so long. That seemed crazy to me. But she described every step she did. And also she put tips and how she was feeling. And I thought, okay, this makes sense. Like I've done this in for so long. I should also take a good amount of time to come off of it. So she had this whole plan set up, and I thought, I'm going to follow this. I'm going to follow exactly what she did, because she said at the end, she was off. And she'd been off for 17 months. I was following in her footsteps for sure. So I made my plan, and I said, okay, we're going to do 5 years. We're going to do a 5-year thing. So I really like Excel spreadsheets. So I did an Excel spreadsheet of my dose and the percentage of drop that it was at every single time and the amount of months that I was going to be on that dose. And I planned it all out. So this time I was gonna nail this thing, James. I was gonna overcome it and just beat system. And I felt really, good about it, sad in the fact that this is a long time of my life to be doing this, but I wanted it. So I was just had this plan, and it was in the background of my life, and I was just doing it, but I was able to function and work and be involved in my friends' lives and just be myself, but also be doing this taper in the background. So here we go. I'm ready to do it. I was going to do a compound pharmacy. They're really great. They can do specific doses that the pharmaceutical companies will not do. And unfortunately, it's a lot more expensive and insurance does not cover it. But I thought, okay, this is a chunk of change and it's just going to be worth it to me to do this. So here we go. My husband and I, we're both on board. We're doing it. And in the meantime, it's kind of an obsession for me now. Like, I'm still going on the Surviving Antidepressants website, checking in on people. I built some friendships, seeing how what other people are doing. And then the woman that I was following in her footsteps, she started posting that she was almost 2 years off and she was experiencing horrific withdrawal. And that was incredible to me. She'd been doing so well and so long off of it. I mean, not even taking a teeny tiny gram of it, but then it hit so much longer later. So that led me into questioning my entire plan, of course, because I was doing exactly what she did. And so then I altered mine after really just looking at her stuff. And then she said, this is what I wish I would have done. So I am doing now everything that she wished she would have done. Right. I'm holding longer. Now my plan is up to 9 years. And that's depressing, but okay, I'm going to do it. So really this whole time after that, I think this has been about it's been a year. So last year in March, I started my long taper plan. So it's been a year. And in that year, I have been constantly, like almost every week, tweaking my Excel plan to make sure to like essentially put a mattress under me. Yeah. Okay, this I'm going to do so that I don't experience this. And you know what? It's really not in the background of my life now that I'm thinking about it. It's in the forefront still because I'm constantly going back to it, constantly redoing my percentages and dosage.
I think what you're doing is right. Anything that you can do to get some control over this process is going to make it more achievable for you than if someone else were trying to do it for you. And so, Megan, how has that first year of your tapering plan been for you?
I've got on fairly well, I would say. It's had its ups and downs, of course, the first two times, which is so good. So it just depends on, right now I'm at 14 milligrams, and that's only 6 from where I was, but I'm so blessed to be here 6 milligrams later. This month in particular has been hard, going from 15 milligrams, which I held 15 for 4 months, just to kind of let my central nervous system rest a bit. Coming from that to 14 was a little bit more rough than I wanted it to be. I've been having to take some sleeping medicine just to, it takes about 4 days for a new dose to register. This is just what I've read. So it's been a week on 14, and I'm hoping in the next couple of days it'll just kind of level out and I'll be in a better place. But overall, it's been good. It's been in the background. Christmas time was a little bit hard. It's always difficult to go travel while doing this because being in a new place and not having a specific routine, that kind of triggers me just a little bit with the sleep issues and a little bit of anxiety. Again, nothing I had before I started this medicine. So I just try to over prepare when I go travel, just like bring some extra sleeping pills just in case I'm really. And I used to bring benzodiazepines in case, but I've since stopped doing that because I realized that's a very slippery slope for a lot of people at the SA site. Yeah. They say, don't do that. You know, to mix those two is not good. So I try to not do that.
I think that's very sensible. Megan, you sound really positive that you've got a plan. You sound really focused and determined to get where you want to. And you've given yourself a sensible timescale to get there. I think that's excellent. Megan, can I ask, if you had a friend who was considering taking an antidepressant, what would you say to them?
Oh, goodness. So many things. I'll condense it for you. I would say, and this is just coming from me, obviously I'm not a doctor. I would say, wait at least 6 months, research your options, go to Surviving Antidepressants website. And for the medicine that you're thinking about trying or anything that you're thinking about trying, look at these people's experiences. Obviously, everyone is different. Some people have a breeze getting off of these, and I'm overjoyed for them. I mean, that's so good that some people don't suffer. I love that. But the majority do. And so just assume that you're in the majority and look at these people and say, is this going to be worth it to me if I do want to come off of it? And then also look at the side effects. I mean, even WebMD, anything. And I would also say to exhaust your testing, get your blood tests do that like 7 times and get your thyroid tested, get your glands tested. I now have a thyroid issue, I think partially because of this drug and also for a hormone test. A lot of the times people can have their hormones, especially women, but a lot of men too. And that is kind of causing these symptoms that they think, oh, maybe I'm depressed, but their hormones are just out of whack. Go to a doctor or any doctor and get these tests done and see what you can see before you do that, before you even entertain this option. That's what I would tell them. And try everything natural that you can, massage, even acupuncture. Because if you can get away without putting some poison in your body, do it. Do it, do it, do it. And if you end up deciding that an antidepressant is for you, then I will be here for you every single step of the way.
That's great advice. Thank you so much. And I just wondered, Megan, if there was anything else that you'd like to mention.
I would love to talk about just a little bit about suicide and antidepressants, because I weep for the people that, especially the younger children whose brains are still developing and are given these medicines then take their lives because they think that because their brains are in a place where they just can't imagine functioning at this level, but it's because of the medicine a lot of the times, and not always, I can't say always, but a lot of the times, yes, it's because of these medicines. I mean, one of the cautions on all the bottles are may cause suicidal thoughts. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That may cause worsening of these thoughts. So that scared me the most out of every single symptom, I thought, because the first time that I did withdrawal, just in those 2 weeks, I was making plans to not live anymore. And James, let me tell you, I have always been someone who maybe is not crazy about life all the time. Like, you know, it's not fun to have a father pass away, but I never did not want to live. I always wanted to live more because as a Christian, I just know that like my life is not my own. And that's just my belief system and everyone is different. But that to me is so scary and so real, me saying, this is not worth it. I can't do this anymore. And so I want to just encourage anyone who is at that place to try. I know it's so hard to be logical and rational when you're in that place. So very hard. But to the best of your ability, get with a good friend and tell them everything that you're thinking, or a counselor or somebody, because it's not long lasting. Yeah. It will go away. It's not forever. And I would just hate for anyone to go ahead and go through with it when it is not them. It's the medicine making us think these things. And so it's just really heartbreaking. And I hope that people reach out to a crisis hotline or a really trusted friend, somebody that can walk us through this, because I would not have made it through without my husband and reading my Bible and just praying and being so angry at God that he would not let me do this to myself, because I just couldn't. I couldn't do it, but I wanted to so badly. And after going back up on my dose, I thought, what was I thinking? I mean, that was not me. And so really, I'm just praying for everybody out there in that place. I mean, try as you might, try to be a little bit logical and say, this might not be me. This might be the medicine. And to separate ourselves a little bit is beneficial. Yeah. Really, really beneficial.
That's great, Megan. Thank you. It is so important to help people realize that suicidal thoughts can be an effect of antidepressant treatment or antidepressant withdrawal, and that sometimes you need to reach out to others to help you realize that.
Exactly. That's where I hope we can come in for people that are thinking about this, to kind of stop them right where they're standing and hopefully get a new perspective on this medicine, because it's so widely prescribed for everything. I literally saw for cramps, for really bad cramps and menstrual symptoms, the medicine that I am taking, but it's just under a different name and it's maybe a little bit lower of a dose, but still the same medicine. And I was livid. Oh my gosh, I'm still kind of livid just talking about it.
People really have no idea what they're getting themselves into, do they? Megan, you've been so clear about your experiences, and it will help others to hear this. I wish that I'd been able to hear people like you back when I was thinking about taking an antidepressant, because I wouldn't be in the position that I am now. Thank you so much for being willing to share your story.
Oh, James, and I just want to thank you, because if it's not for, I don't really have a big venue to get this out all the time. I mean, Facebook is small in terms of what I can reach. So I just really applaud you, like you, to get this out. And especially the fact that you're one of us, it makes it so much better. I mean, I really wish that you weren't in the place that you are completely, but it's almost as if the things that we've gone through and will continue to go through are not in vain. You know, we're going to be helped. That's what I just have to think. If all this comes down to helping one person say no to Paxil, then I'm going to be so happy.
Me too. Thank you so much, Megan. Well, I'm sure you'll agree it was inspirational to hear how Megan took on her withdrawal and how determined she was to learn from her experiences and to help and support others too. I really do recommend you visit the website survivingantidepressants.org if you haven't already. It's an amazing community of people who provide excellent advice and support with many aspects of antidepressant treatment and withdrawal.
Feedback.
Thank you so much for getting in touch and giving me your feedback. It's great to know that you are finding the podcast interesting and informative. As I'm sure you can imagine, there's been quite a lot of feedback on last week's interview with Robert Whittaker. Rob writes, "Outstanding interview with very useful questions. As a clinical psychologist in the reform movement for many years, I love to see institutionalized psychiatry held accountable like this and the drug companies similarly exposed." Another listener writes, "Wow, such a powerful interview. For me, hearing people talk rather than reading text gives much more meaning to what people like Robert say. I honestly feel like I've had some kind of awakening lately. Things are all starting to make sense in regards to what I have and am experiencing as a person who uses services." And finally, this was taken from comments on a blog that I had published recently on the Mad in America website. "James, your podcast is compelling, valuable, and informative. I have been studying psychotropic drug toxicity, and it's evident that general practitioners and specialists have been left with a void in their knowledge, skills, and awareness in the toxicology of these alleged medications. Few have heard of akathisia induced on commencing, changing, or withdrawing from SSRIs. How then can they be expected to diagnose and manage this life-threatening and most serious of the wide range of psychotropic adverse drug reactions? I have seen the intense suffering of akathisia misdiagnosed as psychotic depression and exacerbated by the catastrophe of immediate incarceration and enforced drugging with fluoxetine and olanzapine. Should a greater awareness and understanding be forthcoming, your podcast would, in my personal opinion, as a hospital consultant who trained future general practitioners for over 30 years, be an excellent discussion, teaching, and learning tool, both in general practice training and continuing medical education. Thank you for this valuable opportunity to further address such a dangerous and profound failure and our duty as doctors to prescribe safely and with appropriate and adequate knowledge of adverse drug reactions." Well, thank you so much to all of you for getting in touch and for your feedback. I'm so grateful for each and every message I receive and for your continued support and encouragement with the podcast. Also, I wanted to let you know about an upcoming event, Life 2.0 Three Principles Conference, An Easier Life Through a Simple Understanding of the Mind. This is a 3-day conference being held from the 21st to the 23rd of May in London. This conference is about pointing people to their innate health and resilience and is open to anyone interested in an alternative paradigm. The conference also includes a health professional seminar on the final day titled Examining the Potential for Wellbeing and Resilience Both in Ourselves and Our Patients. If you're interested to find out more, please go to this website, 3pconference.org. That's the number 3pconference.org, or simply search Google using the words Three Principles Conference. I also wanted to mention this petition on behalf of the Recovery and Renewal Group. This petition to the Scottish Parliament is intended to raise political, press, and public awareness of the plight of individuals who are affected by dependence on and withdrawal from prescribed antidepressants and benzodiazepines, and specifically to ask the Scottish Government to support the British Medical Association's UK-wide call for action to provide timely and appropriate support for individuals affected. People from any country can sign in support of the petition, and you can add your own comments too, either directly on the petition or you can email them to petitions@parliament.scot until the 10th of May 2017. Thereafter, the petition will be formally lodged for further investigation and consideration by the Scottish Parliament Public Pensions Committee. There is a direct link to the petition on my own website, jfmoore.co.uk. Just go to the links Facts page, and it's right at the top. If you have any questions about the petition, you can contact Marion by emailing recoveryandrenewal@gmail.com, or you can tweet @recover2renew. That's @recover2renew. Please support and sign this petition, because it's really important to raise awareness of this issue. Finally, if you're struggling with withdrawal yourself and don't know where to turn, there are some excellent resources listed on my website, jfmoore.co.uk. Please go and have a look.
Please do not increase, decrease, or stop your psychoactive prescription medication without the advice and support of a medical or mental health professional.
Thank you so much for listening. Please come back next week for another episode. And until next time, take care.
Thank you so much for listening to Let's Talk Withdrawal. Come back next week for more news and views. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review and subscribe in iTunes.